Fred Film Radio, Festival de Cannes.
Hello and welcome to Fred Film Radio. I'm Amani Mohammed, reporting from the 67th Cannes International Film Festival. I'm joined today by Paul Laverty, the long-term collaborator with Ken Loach, for Jimmy's Hall, which is here in the main competition at the festival. I have to ask you first off, Paul, I mean, this is the question that's on everybody's lips here at Cannes. Is this the end of Ken Loach's movie-making career? Is this the last movie that he's ever going to make? Is he really going to retire?
I think he'll wait and see what happens after the summer, you know. But he's 78 now, but he's still got the energy of a whippet, you know, those little greyhound dogs, you know. He's got great energy and, you know, intellectually very vital as well now. So but he's a man built for action. He's a bit like a shark, got to keep moving. So I'll believe it when I see it. He comes alive with work, and filming is only one of the things he does. You know, he does many other things. He's an activist, and, you know, he's involved in many things. So if he doesn't do filmmaking, he'll do something else. Anyway, we've had a great run, so I'm not worried at all.
You know, when your films are selected here at Cannes, you and Ken come together. I mean, you've had films win awards here. Are you kind of like blasé about it now, or do you really still feel that thrill of Cannes?
I feel it's an amazing privilege, really. You know, I mean, they've been so generous to us to here. This is the 8th time I've been back. And you never expect to even go once, so I'm always surprised, and I don't mean that in any false manner at all. But it's an amazing platform for the film and the ideas we're trying to wrestle with. Just before lunch, they were speaking to a TV station for the whole of Latin America. I mean, that's a great privilege to do that. So I treat it very, very seriously. You know, I try to respect the script and the characters, which means you have respect for the audience, which means you have respect for the people who debate and talk about it. There's nothing blasé about that, because I think it's part of the dialogue, and it's an amazing privilege. You know, to have this platform here in Cannes where you can talk to the press about this story, you know, and so many people are struggling so hard to get film made, and I know how hard it is. So I really enjoy it, you know, in the sense you see family and friends and collaborators who've been planning on the story with you for a 3-year period. So you celebrate, it's like the hall, you celebrate the fact that it's come to fruition, and it's lovely when you get a lovely response, or you hear that, like just now you've told me, but you can never assume it's going to happen. So you always have to be your own toughest critic and never assume it's easy, and always look for something fresh and really fight for it.
You've collaborated with Ken Loach for many, many years, probably more than you care to remember. Do you have a shorthand with each other when you're collaborating on films? And also, yes, with Jimmy's Hall, did you bring this story to him, or did he bring this story to you? How does it work?
It's all very organic. I mean, in this particular case, I mean, 25 years ago, I was working as a human rights lawyer in Nicaragua, and I met this wonderful Irish writer and actor, Donal O'Kelly, and he was doing something with asylum seekers in Ireland to highlight their plight, you know, people who are just left dangling maybe for 4 or 5 years in Ireland. They don't allow them to work with the threat of deportation hanging over their heads, and he linked it back to the story of Jimmy Gralton. He was doing something for them, and then he gave me this information, and I looked at it and I said, God, this would make for an amazing story. The Hall was such a tight premise, so concise, in microcosm of Ireland in the 1930s. I said, Donald, you should write a script about that and get a film made. But he was up to his eyes in many things. I mentioned it to Ken, and then Donald says, well, you, if you're interested, you go for it. And so he was incredibly generous. But we loved the premise from the beginning, because it was just such richness of ideas and possibilities. You know, there was the music, there was the dance, there was the mischief, there was the building of the hall, there was a challenging power, it was about dissidents, it was about finding a free space. And, you know, when you see a story which is, you know, so obviously multi-layered, with the possibility of complexity and drama in it, that says a great deal about the society of those times, which is also universal, but creating free spaces, challenging power, it was overflowing with possibilities that became very enticing for us.
So how would you describe Jimmy's character then, and what do you think he was trying to achieve?
As a man of independent spirit, you know, who wanted to ask tough questions of power. And the instinct of these powerful bodies is always to crush dissent. It's how power operates without constraint, and it likes to silence, you know, the difficult voices. You know, and I think he's saying, you know, I'm an ordinary man, but, you know, together we can actually change things in our lives. So we're celebrating his atheism and his secularism and his humanity, rather than turning him into some new Christ-like figure. In those times too, you know, to be called an antichrist and to be, have the cattle invasions, I mean, I think his life was in danger. So I certainly wouldn't call him a coward. I wouldn't call him a coward. But he was a complicated character, you know, and I think he was a man of great mischief. He was funny, You know, he went along to speak to the priest. He said, "Do you want to stick my horns on, since I'm the devil?" You know, he was a guy who wasn't scared to challenge people in power. And everybody who talked about him, you know, I've read the records, you know, they called him a free man. They said he was fun and mischief, you know. So I think he had great vitality about him, really.
You did a lot of research. Obviously, there's a great responsibility when you're portraying a real character,
yes, yes.
Somebody that people know and loved equally, to portray this character in a certain way. Yeah. But I'm just wondering how much of the research went into the script and then into the film that we see, and how much creative license were you able to get away with without being disrespectful? Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm glad you asked that question. We're very, very upfront about that, because I'd hate to deceive the audience. All the public events, you know, are all from the records. You know, Jimmy, his life, you know, the building of the hall, the voluntary labour, the hall was shot into, they actually set a mine at the door and they tried to blow it up, which didn't work. You know, we didn't have time for all that. They burnt down the hall, Jimmy was deported, he was never allowed back in. There's so much about a person's inner life, you know, their private secrets, their inner motivations, their vulnerabilities. That's not part of the record. And I talked to Paul, to Jimmy's family, who have passed down stories from word to mouth, and I said, well, for such a charismatic man, he came back with all this energy. You know, did he have a secret sweetheart? And Paul, who is a descendant of Geraldton, said, you would just never know. All right? So you can either say, well, I'm not going to touch that, or you embrace it. And so Una is an imaginary character, and we've said that. But in a way, I still think it's inspired by those circumstances, because although they were still two free thinkers, their lives would be so secret and constrained by culture and religion and the circumstances. But that is imaginary. The Catholic priests in the film, okay? Now, I read the reports of all the priests in the area and the bishops, and there was, you know, there was a whole bunch of them criticising them. But for the sake of you know, simplicity for the script, we have reduced that to two fictional characters, but inspired by the real priests. You know, we've said that openly, you know, and the group of friends, you don't know what his relationship was with them. We can only imagine what it was like, but we know there was a boxing class, you know, painting class, all those types of things. So the private, intricate relationships and the subtleties of that, we've just had to imagine.
How do you see Jimmy's Hall as a place per se? And, you know, do you think this story is universal?
This hall was a character, you know. The people around it had character. It was a very tight, concise story, but it was actually also a very universal story for the things we've talked about, because these people were trying to protect a free space where they could fully express their talent as human beings, and they did their very best to protect that. And also, what I love about working with Ken is he's very true to that aesthetic. You know, he follows the story. So all the young kids in the film are from all around Sligo. You know, for an Irish audience, the accents will make sense. You have some sense of the landscape, which of course was very, very poor and affected the life of, you know, the landless labourer. There's things implicit in the landscape, in that boggy land, that bleed into the film for people who know that culture. Not everybody will get it, but, you know, many, many people will. So I think if you're very, very truthful and authentic and have a sense of place, you know, it's like the mother, Aileen, you know, who played the mother. You know, she's not a professional actress, but she's off that area. Her accent is beautiful, you know. When she looks at the priest, she looks him in the eye, but she's still very, very respectful. But you sense somebody who's got her own criteria. It's all quite subtle, really. And if you do all that well, I think people will communicate and they'll bring their own culture and their own imagination to it.
The casting was genius for her. I mean, I believe Ken found her in the open casting call, the mother.
Yes, I mean, she was she's a local farmer, but she was also a shop steward for a trade union. You know, so you can sense that she had a hinterland to her. You know, she had a presence and very, very warm, intelligent woman. You know, great humanity about her. But you felt that there was something serious about her underneath, you know. And
she had
and
great presence.
Yeah, she did, yes. I really liked her.
And just finally, what's the overall message of the film, Jimmy's Hall?
People ask me, what is the message of the film? You know, it's if a film works and the characters are good and they're complicated, you know, it's many things, you know. I think what happened in that hall was a place where people could meet and debate and think and analyse their lives and power in society, where people could use their imaginations, where they could learn. So, and in a way then it challenged power, and so that took courage. But it was also a place where people nourished each other, you know, where they danced, where they laughed, where they took the piss, where they could laugh with their friends. You know, and they could put on music and hear what was coming. Because Jimmy's secret weapon was the gramophone record he brought back from New York. And we know he brought back records from Paul Robson, for example. Did he bring back Betty Smith? I don't know if he brought back Missy Smith, but some things you have to guess. And so I think it's many things. You know, I think it's anger at the power, because it became a theological gulag. Church dominating absolutely everything, and they wanted to crush dissent, they wanted to crush music, they wanted to crush imagination, and these people were at the forefront of trying to challenge that. So it's angry in that sense, but it's also joyful of their friendship and their affection and of the music. I think there's a great joie de vivre in them.
Yeah, I mean, the music was extremely important to this film. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but at the end of the press screening, there was a whole massive group of us all clapping along to the music. So the whole of the theatre was clapping along to the music. It was absolutely tapping along. I was so surprised. Congratulations on Jimmy's Hall. And that's all we've got time for. Thank you very much, Paul Laverty, for joining us here on Fred Film Radio.
Thanks very much indeed.
I've just been speaking to Paul Laverty, the writer and long-term collaborator with Ken Loach, for Jimmy's Hall. I'm Amani Mohammed, reporting from the 67th Cannes International Film Festival, and you're listening to Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.